Good day. This is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, May 6th, 2025. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. The first story today is titled Sonic Open for Business. And this is by Kayla White. The long-awaited day has finally come, as the new Sonic drive-in location on the corner of Fairchild and Vermilion Streets is officially open to the public. The ribbon was officially cut Monday morning at 10:30 a.m. by Jacob Barnard, franchisee and general manager, alongside Mayor Ricky Williams Jr., co-owner Patrick Wampler, and a whole crew of staff. Barnard said he is thrilled to see the business opening their doors to Danville. "It's time for Danville to get something new. We felt like this was a really good location because we're kind of in the middle of it all. We've got the high school that definitely needs some support, and I just don't think we could have picked a better location," Barnard said. As far as what sets Sonic apart from competition, Barnard said it starts with their staff. "We have really great servers. We have really good food, and we have some more technology, so we're just modernizing what other drive-ins have been doing well for years," Barnard said. The new drive-in restaurant features touch screens in each individual parking space with menu details and a button to press when customers are ready to order. Once orders are complete, they are brought to the customers' cars by staff. Sonic will be open from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day of the year, Barnard said. The next story is titled, I'm Doing What I Can. Area businesswoman starting nonprofit to house area homeless. And this story is by Kayla White. Hope Garrett has a vision for a better tomorrow for Danville's homeless residents, and she's not going to let anything hold her back. While details are currently being ironed out between Garrett and the city of Danville, she is confident that her idea for Tiny Homes of Vermilion County, a nonprofit organization she is creating that will build tiny homes on a plot of land in the middle of Danville to house the homeless, will become a reality sooner rather than later. "We have to do it the right way, so that's going to take some time," she said, adding that although she doesn't have a clear idea of a timeline, she is confident her idea will become a reality. "This is happening. I am going to make sure this happens," Garrett said, smiling broadly. The idea to house those struggling with home insecurity in tiny homes first came to Garrett, CEO of Education Personnel Federal Credit Union, when she saw a family member building their own tiny home down in Texas. She also felt moved to action when she witnessed the struggles her father endured. A Vietnam War veteran who had been badly harmed by Agent Orange, Garrett's father began to struggle with depression at one point in his life. "Even though my father had always done all the right things, he worked his whole life, he raised a family, he paid his taxes, he did things right, he served his country, but yet there was a point when his health got to a point where he couldn't work anymore," Garrett said. "There was this point in time between him being a working person and him being a disabled person where he started to fall through the cracks of the system," she said, adding that his situation could have been much worse if he hadn't had the support network he did. Aside from veterans, Garrett also felt moved by the plight she witnessed others struggling with, from recently freed Danville residents who were previously incarcerated and struggling to find work, to single moms, to people who are just down on their luck. "These are not bad people. They're people who have just hit a bad point in their life. And we want to help change that," she said, adding that credit unions are nonprofit co-ops, not banks. So she has lots of experience in looking out for the everyday person above profit. Garrett decided to present her idea in a competition at last year's annual Illinois Credit Union League Conference, hosted by the Illinois Credit Union Foundation. They did a contest, and it was Shark Tank style. So we had to put our ideas to them. We submitted them in writing, and then they chose three finalists, and mine was one of the finalists. So I had 3 minutes to present this rather complicated idea, Garrett said. Despite losing the contest, Garrett's team won the popular vote, and she was suddenly inundated with people encouraging her to pursue her idea. They just kept coming up to me and saying, "You have to do this. You need to do this," Garrett said, adding that in the following months, she had another credit union reach out and ask her to share her plans, if they come to fruition, so that they also can implement them in their own community. The idea she presented, though full of lots of complex details, comes down to one simple belief Garrett has. Poverty cannot be solved by focusing on only one issue, but housing is the linchpin. Based on work by the United Nations, the National Credit Union Foundation has identified 12 key issues or barriers to developing economic stability, Garrett said in a social media post. Among those barriers are education, employment, housing, inclusion, transportation, environment, and more. It'd be cute if we could address these one at a time, but that's not the way it works. They're all integrated, and so you go to take on one, and you've got to take on six more, and then you're overwhelmed, Garrett said. Rather than issuing rental assistance checks, Garrett said, her idea will give vetted applicants the opportunity to connect to a plethora of resources during the 2 to 5 year program duration, with the end goal helping them to address the barriers to wellness and safety so they can move into their own place. Housing is a key component of not just financial stability, but life stability. Having a place to go back to where you can shower, where you can store your things, a place that's yours, it just gives a whole piece of stability that me just giving somebody a check for rental assistance doesn't do. Garrett envisions a whole network of people and organizations working together to make her dream a reality, starting with those who will build the tiny houses. High school students at Danville High School may have the opportunity to help build the houses using either build kits or supplies donated or sold at a discounted rate by area stores. She said she also already had a general contractor on board, as well as some others in the community who have signed on to help. Applicants will be referred to the organization by other organizations, such as Danville Rescue, which is currently housing men on an emergency overnight basis. Once they have been vetted and placed in their tiny home, which Garrett said can hold as many as 3 separate living spaces, they will be presented with a customized plan to help them overcome the barriers in their life. As far as the logistics of placing the homes on a property within Danville, Garrett said she has a few options as of now, but hasn't settled on one specifically, though she said the city has been very supportive since she first brought the idea to Logan Kronk, Director of Public Works, and Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. For as big and complex as this is, it has been met with a tremendous amount of goodwill and encouragement, Garrett said. And again, talk is cheap, but these people actually want to be involved and make it happen. At the end of the day, Garrett said she is passionate about getting people into safe, affordable housing because it's one way she can contribute to healing what she called a broken world. The world is broken. I guess maybe this is my way of fighting back. Like, you can shove them to the side, and I'm going to pick them back up again, Garrett said. I do it because somebody needs to. There's a lot I can't do, but this I can do. So I do it because I can. That's the skill set I was given, and I just think that if we all did our little piece, we could solve so many problems, Garrett said. To learn more about Tiny Homes of Vermilion County, or to volunteer to help, visit their Facebook page. Next up, we have Lego Show Raises Funds for Wreaths Across America. Builders come from all across the nation. And this is by Kayla White. Thanks to the creativity of some area residents, more of the soldiers interred in the National Cemetery in Danville will be honored with wreaths this December. Danville American Legion Post 210 hosted a Lego show fundraiser on Saturday, May 2nd, featuring the work of Lego architects from far and wide. April Fisher, a Lego architect from Biggers, Arkansas, traveled with one of the largest pieces she's made, a lighthouse standing nearly 4 feet tall. Fisher said the piece took her several months to build. Aside from the tediousness of the work involved, she had to start over several times, she said. It was the first time I'd ever built something this big, and I kept making mistakes and having to take it back down, Fisher said. I started back down here at the bottom 4 times. Fisher was joined by Beth Buffy Hansen, both of them members of Chillug, a Chicago area community made up of a diverse collection of creative Lego builders who travel to host display events like the one Saturday. Fisher's passion for Lego began when she was a school teacher, she said, looking for ways to keep her students engaged. I started building Legos with the kids, and I started using them for homework. I developed some things with the kids to help them do better with their homework. I was running a cottage of 12 kids, and if you can imagine spelling lists with 12 children, or math with 12 children, it got a little tedious after a while. Got a little frustrating for all of them, Fisher said. She would assign spelling words Monday night, and students have to have built the words with Legos by Wednesday, she said. By the time they had the words built, they knew how to spell them, she said. Joe Tracy built an entire city for the event, complete with a functional train track that went around the city on its own, as well as a working roller coaster. I took pictures of it at home, dismantled it, put it in a box, and tried to rebuild it here according to the pictures, Tracy said. For Tracy, building Lego is about reclaiming joy from his childhood. As a kid, I enjoyed building, and then when we enter what I call the Dark Ages, when you become an adult and you stop playing with Lego, he said. But then I woke up one day and it's like, I'm going to play with Lego again. Let's bring out all the old sets. He said he enjoys the process of building Lego sets because of the ways it helps him de-stress. It's a mental thing, like you're following the instructions, you're building the pieces, you're completing a build, Tracy said. Attendees paid $2 to enter the Legion, and there were many other ways to donate, including raffles of Lego sets. Brian Stoltz, who organized the event, said he and his wife became interested in building Lego displays after attending several events over the years, including Brick World, the largest Lego convention in the Midwest, which takes place in Schaumburg every year. The time came where we had seen quite a few of these ourselves. We need to take the step, and instead of just being spectators, where we can be displayers in this as well, Stoltz said. The idea for the fundraiser came to him as a result of his passion for both Lego and supporting local initiatives designed to assist and honor veterans. After watching a friend put on a fundraiser at Lego show in Indiana to raise funds for another organization, Stoltz decided to host one for Wreaths Across America. This was an easy one to support. They need additional reasons for the cemetery to remember, honor, and teach about our heroes from yesteryear, Stoltz said. We only had about 4,000 wreaths last December, and there are just over 11,000 soldiers interred there at the National Cemetery. The fundraiser was hosted by the American Legion in cooperation with Tammy Williams, who runs Wreaths Across America locally. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for May 6th. And the first today is for Imogen Childress. Imogen Childress, 89, of Phythian, passed away on May 2, 2025. Private graveside services are to be held at O'Brien Cemetery on Thursday, May 8, 10:30 a.m. Memories and messages can be left at the website for Kruger Cone Pape on their Facebook page. Lainey W. Raspberry. Lainey Warren Raspberry, 83, died at 6:29 p.m. on Friday, December 6, 2024, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Burial will be in Danville National Cemetery in Danville with military honors for the Army veteran by American Legion Post 210. Rotvet Funeral Services and Crematory at 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton is in charge of the arrangements. Jennifer J. Walters. Jennifer J. Walters, 50, of Tilton, died at 7:05 p.m. Friday, May 2nd, at home surrounded by her family. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rotvet Funeral Services and Crematory at 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. And that's all for the regular obituaries today. There's also one from the front page titled Former Governor George Ryan, Dead at 91. And this is by Hannah Meisel from Capital News, Illinois. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan died Friday morning at 91, more than two decades after leaving office for the last time, and 12 years after his release from federal prison. He died just one day after being put into hospice care in his native Kankakee. Ryan, a Republican, served one term as governor from 1999 to 2003 and spent the last decade or so of his life speaking about and ultimately writing a book on his 2000 decision to put a moratorium on Illinois' death penalty and then commuting the sentences of 167 death row inmates in the state's prison system to life sentences. I can't really believe that there's ever going to be a system devised where an innocent person couldn't be executed, Ryan told Capital News Illinois in a 2020 interview. You got to have a perfect law if you're going to have death as a penalty. So I figured the best way to do it was to do away with that opportunity. But Ryan's time as governor and his entire 35-year career in politics was ultimately overshadowed by his time as Secretary of State in the 1990s. During his two terms leading that office, Ryan oversaw a license for bribe scheme that led to the deaths of six children in a fiery vehicle explosion and 79 federal indictments, including his own. Before that, Ryan served as lieutenant governor alongside Governor Jim Thompson, whose law firm would later represent Ryan pro bono in his corruption case. He also spent 2 years as Illinois House Speaker, capping a decade in the General Assembly. A pharmacist by trade, Ryan began his political career in the late 1960s on the Kankakee County Board. The former governor spent nearly 6 years in prison and on home confinement after his 2006 conviction on corruption charges stemming from an investigation into a freak accident on a Milwaukee expressway in 1994. The Willis family, who'd been driving from Chicago to a vacation in Wisconsin, were engulfed in flames when their minivan exploded after a taillight fell off of a semi-trailer truck and punctured the van's fuel tank. The explosion killed the six Willis children, while the Reverend Dwayne Willis and his wife Janet were badly burned. An investigation into the crash revealed that other motorists had tried to warn the semi-driver about the dangling vehicle part, but he didn't understand English, even though federal law requires truck drivers to be proficient in English to get a commercial license. After Wisconsin authorities passed along the information to the Secretary of State's office, an internal investigation found the truck driver may have paid a bribe to get his license. But Ryan squashed the probe and fired the investigators. The feds, however, picked up the investigation while Ryan was running for governor, finding a systematic operation in which bribes paid for commercial driver's licenses were funneled into Ryan's campaign fund. Even as Secretary of State employees were being indicted in what came to be known as Operation Safe Roads, Ryan claimed to know nothing about the scheme and was elected governor over Democratic then U.S. Representative Glenn Pashard in 1998. But as the investigation reached a fever pitch and the cloud of suspicion over Ryan grew, he chose to not run for a second term as governor in 2002. That paved the way for Democrat Rod Blagojevich's victory over Republican Jim Ryan, who suffered from sharing a surname and party with the then governor. Ryan was indicted in 2004, convicted in 2006 after a lengthy trial, and went to prison in 2007 following a months-long appeals process, making him the third Illinois governor to serve time. Several years later, Blagojevich would follow. Since his 2013 release from prison and subsequent stint on home confinement, Ryan dedicated the last years of his life returning to a subject he'd become passionate about as governor, the death penalty. Ryan parlayed his speaking engagements into a book, co-authored with former Chicago Tribune reporter and published in 2020, the book titled Until I Could Be Sure: How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois, detailed the former governor's debates and deliberations leading up to his decision to put a moratorium on the state's death penalty in January of 2000. Just before leaving office 3 years later, Ryan commuted the death sentences of 167 Illinois prisoners, which garnered international attention. Ryan's ascent to the governor's office coincided with emerging DNA evidence technology and a wave of exonerations across the country, including in Illinois. The state would later become known as an outlier for false confessions and exonerations. But at the time, Ryan's stance was controversial in a tough-on-crime era of politics. In his 2020 interview with CNI, Ryan said the majority of his staff tried to dissuade him from making moves on the death penalty, which wouldn't be officially abolished in Illinois until 2011. But Ryan said the uncertainty of decisions made under the death penalty system bothered him, especially in the wake of the exoneration of death row inmate Anthony Porter in February of 1999, when Ryan was a month into his term as governor. Porter was freed after journalism students at Northwestern University uncovered evidence of his innocence. The whole system was just prone with error, Ryan said. It's just, you got error in every corner. Former Illinois House GOP leader Jim Durkin, who in 2023 stepped down from the post Ryan held decades before, told CNI he'd gotten to know the former governor better in his later years through Ryan's son, Homer. Durkin said when he'd meet up with the Ryans in Kankakee while campaigning for fellow House Republicans, their lunches would often be punctuated by locals who'd wanted to say, "Hello, Governor," not "Hello, George." They loved him. "He made a mistake and he did his time," Durkin said, "and he didn't express or show any bitterness toward anyone involved in his case. Just wanted to get on with his life." That shows a strong man who takes responsibility. Illinois State Minority Leader John Curran, Republican from Downers Grove, echoed Durkin's accolades that Ryan was a master of bridging the gap, both between Republicans and Democrats, and between organized labor and management. He was a bold leader who wasn't afraid to reach across the aisle and bring people together for the greater good, Curran said. His investments in infrastructure, technology, and education to help create a brighter future for Illinois will long be remembered. Next up, we have a staff report titled "Tilton Man Sentenced to 18 Years for Sexual Assault of Child." Alexander Sims, age 20, was sentenced to 18 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections after pleading guilty to predatory sexual assault of a child, a Class X felony. Sims, previously of Tilton, will serve 85% of his sentence and then mandatory supervised release for the term of 3 years to natural life. He is required to register as a sex offender for life. Judge Mark S. Goodwin presided over the plea and sentencing. "I would like to thank the Tilton Police Department and the Vermilion County Child Advocacy Center for their efforts to bring justice for the victim in this case," State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey said. "The horrendous actions of this sexual predator were deeply harmful. It is my hope that the victim can begin the path forward toward recovery now that the criminal case has concluded. We are grateful for the strength and courage it took for this victim to come forward and for the perseverance and cooperation throughout the court process. This sentence and lifetime sex offender registration reflect the seriousness of these crimes and should serve to protect our community." Next, another staff report. Downtown road closures begin today. As the demolition of Prezi Tower continues, new road closures can be expected in the downtown area. Road and sidewalk closures for the external demolition on the northwest corner of Vermilion and Main Streets will begin today, May 6th, with Phase 2 being the demolition of the Prezi Tower building. Today through Thursday, final preparations and site testing will be performed. The demolition of the tower is expected to begin the afternoon of May 8th and May 9th. All schedules are tentative, and demolition will not begin until all site preparation and safety protocols are in place. During the road closure, the courthouse will remain open and function normally, and all cases will be heard as scheduled. It is suggested that all courthouse visitors adjust their arrival times to accommodate the expected delays and congestion. And finally, from community briefs today, we have Chris Healthy Aging will celebrate Older Americans Month with a luncheon and entertainment at the Danville Senior Center at 309 North Franklin Street on Thursday, May 22nd. Lunch will feature spaghetti and meatballs, salad, garlic bread, and all-American cake and drinks. Lunch will be served from 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. Accolade Healthcare assisted in providing entertainment for the event. Danville's very own Troy Stone is scheduled to serenade guests from 1 to 2 p.m. Call Chris Healthy Aging at 217-443-2999. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, May 6th. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.